Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ole, ole. C'est la Peña Bayona, on est tous là, allez les gars, encore une fois, allez, allez.
I want to start off a question, if that's okay. Can you copyright saying a word in a particular way?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think if that happened, it would have happened with the amount of times we've said rugby on this podcast before. I think World Rugby would have stepped in and said, I'm not sure you can say that, actually.
But the thing is, there's a particular way of saying rugby that I feel almost should be copyrighted, almost should be taken aside. And yet I want to do it all the time myself, and I feel like I can't. I can't step in.
I know where you're about to go with this.
Yeah, because I feel there's no better way to start than having a slight ramble that then leads to a very specific pronunciation of the word rugby. Only I can't do it. We are joined by a man who very much can. Mr. Rion Lowe, how are you doing?
You got to roll that R, Squidge. It's called rugby.
That's
yes.
It.
Yes. Yes. I can't roll R's. Can you, Robbie?
I can badly. Hmm. Badly. I think if I did, my name would be six times as long. It becomes a nightmare to introduce yourself at that point.
It's a skill as South Africans Afrikaners have to acquire at a young age, you know? Roll that R because you got to say rugby whenever you're going to watch the rugby.
That's the main thing, isn't it? It's like you say rugby in the way the actor Isaiah Whitlock Jr. says the word sheet. Yeah. Like you've mastered that. You've taken a basic word and you've made it your own.
Yeah, now whenever I see or I listen to other podcasts that I know are guys that watch me and they just roll that R a little bit when they're talking about it, I'm like, oh, those guys have watched me. I know it. I'm sure you guys know Will, you've been on the Rugby Bits podcast yourself,
yes,
haven't you?
Yeah.
And even then, I hear them, oh, let's start talking about the rugby. I'm like, ah, I know these guys are watching me. I just thought a lot of Afrikaners kind of roll their R's when they're speaking Afrikaans and when they're speaking to South Africans. But as soon as they start recording and they think it's for an international audience, it becomes that normal English R, you know, no rolling. I was like, no, I'm not going to get rid of that. I'm going to just kind of dive into the Afrikaans accent and keep that little bit. So, yeah. And now people identify me that way. It's brilliant. I love it.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
I just want to say for the uninitiated listeners that Rion Lowe, the fantastic Rion Lowe who joins us today, is a rugby YouTuber who certainly I've been getting into a lot more in the last sort of, you know, 6 to 8 months or so. And I now realize is one of, if not the best rugby YouTuber on the platform. Right. Would you agree, Robbie?
I wouldn't make too much argument. Andrew Ford makes our job a lot more easy. But actually, fantastic stuff. Because, you know, when you always posted the rugby updates, came across them via Reddit at first, and I've been kind of sitting in the background quite a long time going, oh, these are good. These are kind of, in many ways, it was when I first started thinking about what Squid Rugby would be, it's kind of, you've kind of done that better than I ever could have. And, you know, the channel grew in its own direction as I started writing the first video and it kind of became a chaotic of a thing. I think, like, you've hit something really brilliantly and really perfectly that is so fun to watch, and I look forward to every week, and I have a little like, oh yes, when it comes the Tuesday, you know, and I get in and I see, ah, it's up, here we are.
Well, with danger of this becoming a bit of a circle jerk, I mean, I didn't start it in a vacuum. Squidge, the channel already existed when I started, and obviously, you know, I said earlier when we were talking before starting that talking heads, there's so many talking heads online, you know. You can search. That's what Mark Morgan, 2 Cents Rugby, did differently as well. He brought in a whiteboard and all the shirts and just made it a bit more interesting. But I was just like, no, I can't be another talking head. I'm desperate to talk about rugby in a more creative way. And I knew you could, obviously wrote a script, and I thought that's actually kind of a difference. I do enjoy writing a lot. I'm not trained in it or anything like that, but when I was younger, I would write little short stories for myself, and I used to write, you know, love letters to the girls and all that kind of stuff. So, I just had this need for an outlet, and I thought, I know about rugby. I love rugby. So I started just writing that, and over the years, I don't watch my first videos. They're embarrassing stuff, but I really do feel that it's, I've gotten a style. I've gotten my voice down on paper. And yeah, I love trying to come up with something interesting to say each week. Sometimes it's tough if the games are shit, but
tell me about it.
Usually there's something interesting to say. And yeah, if people love it, I'm blown away by it. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think if I was to like point down for like your casual rugby YouTube fan, I would say it's like a really chaotic take on like Gareth Mason as a kind of thing. And that's a huge compliment that, the level of depth that you go into, and not just like South African rugby, but like all around the world, and celebrating the sport's not only good side, but also its bad side, and telling a really like truthful, but like almost like a cartoonish version of that. And I really like that. It's really engaging.
It's written and it's packaged well, and it's kind of put together as a, for want of a better word, like a product. Like there's a thing put together there that it's not someone just rambling their thoughts out onto the paper.
The idea was never to sit and ramble with no idea of what to say. Like if I've got a camera in front of me when I start, and some of those sentences, I sometimes just say a single sentence 4 or 5 times and get the best take. There's a lot of editing that goes into it. It's 6-minute videos. Recording takes an hour because I have to redo a lot of takes and all that kind of stuff till I get the best stuff. In recent times, it's gotten a little easier to get the scripts out. At the start, it was a big struggle. And I don't just watch rugby YouTubers. You know, I watch anything. There's all these guys online that do brilliant work. I'm sure you guys know there's places like Good Work and TechLink from the Linus Media Group and all these people who do. I see it as kind of a news show, but not journalistic. It's more of a, you can't call me a journalist, so I can be opinionated. I can be a little bit mean-spirited if I want to, or very positive. I choose to fall on the positive side because the internet doesn't need any more poison on it, you know. I like sincerity and a bit of earnestness in my videos. And then, like you said, don't shy away from the bad parts, but try and empathize with people who are angry online. Why are they like that? So that's why I often, when I see an article that's absolutely garbage, I know there's probably a reason they wrote this. You know? Yeah. It's often not because they believe what they've written. I sometimes feel like I often say, someone needs to pay the bills and they need to get some clicks. So time to write something crazy.
One thing I really like about that is that like you often make light of those situations in a way that isn't at all like self-indulgent. And like I really like that like if you look at the thumbnails to your channel, like it's not your face going, oh, look at me, I'm mad kind of thing. It's like because people pick up when they watch the video, like, oh, you're knowledgeable and funny. But the way I see it, whenever I've watched one of your videos, the main character in your videos is rugby, and you're the second main character. You're like the narrator of what the fuck is going on in this stupid sport. And I absolutely again, I'll end the circle jerk soon. But I just really enjoy that as a take on this sport.
Yeah, no, don't take yourself seriously, especially it's sport. You know, it's not life and death. It is sport. Enjoy it. Have fun with it. Get angry, but don't make it ruin your day because it's sport at the end of the day. And it's easy for me to disconnect and disconnect emotionally from the sport when I'm not thinking about it. But as soon as I'm in front of my computer and I'm writing, it's so much fun to just dive into and find the ridiculous parts and the dark parts and make light of that and just celebrate the good parts as well. It's all part of the thing I'm trying to do.
Also very reassured by saying it often takes 4 or 5 takes because like the reason it's voiceover only on Squid Rugby, if you look at the first Squid Rugby video that went out, the Ospreys one way back in 2018, remember those days? Remember when I had hair? back way back when? If you watch the first minute of that video, I am talking to camera. And then I realize this is too much work. I can't do this. I'm very bad at reading an auto cue. So I gave up on it. I gave up on that idea, and I just recorded the voiceover and stuck to that ever since.
You've
managed it. You've got it. You've got your sofa set up. You've
Practice.
Got the lovely yeah.
Practice. Yeah. Yeah.
It worked for
and I realized like pantomime, you have to be over the top when you're on camera. Otherwise it doesn't come out at all like you're enthusiastic. So all of that you pick up by my 10th video, I'm totally different from my first, and by my 50th video, I'm way different. And I feel now I've gotten to the point where I'm so comfortable in front of the camera, I like to embarrass myself and do stupid shit, you know.
It comes across, man. Yeah. I'm interested, Rian. How long have you been into rugby for?
Well, I actually, this World Cup that we're covering today, 2007, I was, now I'm going to show, I don't look it, but I'm nearly 40 years old.
No way.
I was 22 in 2007. So I was in my full varsity drinking, partying life when this was happening.
Robbie, this most of these about players the same about age as Dwayne Vermeulen. They're about the same age.
All of these guys are about my same age or just a little bit older than me, a couple years older than me in this in this thing. So it was around 2007. I was a late bloomer getting into it because I was a bit of a stoner burnout at varsity in high school. So the rugby jocks were like, screw those guys. I'm into skateboarding and punk music and all that kind of stuff. So I was a bit anti-rugby, even though deep down I did love it, you know. And then when we won this World Cup, it just kind of rekindled that small passion I had as a young kid and lost during high school years. And I really, really, really got into it around, I think, 2013. Around there, my mates and I realized, listen, we've got money and we can afford to buy tickets to rugby games. So, and we live like 10Ks from Ellis Park. Why don't we just go to rugby games on the weekend? We never know what to do on a Saturday. And that's when it really, really, really took hold of me and my mates. We were at Ellis Park every Saturday that we could. I've watched like the All Blacks play there 20 times, you know, any game that happened there. The Lions, Curry Cup games, in the rain, Friday nights, in the dark, I was there. And actually, since you guys started making videos, that just added another layer of knowledge onto the game, which has just increased my obsession with it even more. Like, we'll talk about it today. Like, watching this game, having never watched it again after seeing your videos, the stuff they do, man, what are these people doing? They're amateurs, you know? it was around this time. And then around 2010, 2013, around there where I really got into it.
We are, of course, talking, probably worth mentioning in brief, your last video having constant ospreys.
I don't know why I said yes to this. You're the enemy.
You're the enemy here. We've fallen in a terrible week.
Yeah, well, I know.
You know what this
is? Pure... sabotage this to just like say terrible things about women or something.
You know what this is? This is classic rugby values. We're shaking hands and having a beer before the game. Yeah. Good pleasure to meet you. Bill Beaumont would love this. So as you allude to, right, Rian, you had like also this week a brief kind of sidle into, as you mentioned, film criticism. You had your Roger Ebert moment, stepping over. This game is on IMDb for some reason. South Africa v Fiji from 2007 in the Rugby World Cup. For some reason.
I was very surprised when I saw that. I was like, it's like what classic rugby matches? That's what it falls under or something like that.
Yeah.
Rugby matches of history or something like that. And there was does that mean all these players have IMDb credits?
Cast list would be the team sheet, but no, there's no cast list listed. The plot is listed in all caps as South Africa edged an absorbing clash with the exciting Fijians to book a World Cup semi-final place.
Which, who directed this game?
That is also left blank, which is a shame. They're not giving credit properly, honestly.
So before we get into this game, we have to crack down on this. So, for full transparency, the other 47 games of this Rugby World Cup were genuine rugby games that were played out by two teams, trying their hardest to beat one another, and they came up with authentic results. Mm-hmm. This one, however, was a scheduled and rehearsed piece of drama.
WWE, yeah.
Like the moon landing, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, those are the big three pieces of drama.
Also Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick also faked this. When did Stanley Kubrick die? It was 1999. So Stanley Kubrick had been dead for 8 years.
And so this was long in the making. This was like Boyhood. Where, you know, if I die in the production of this, they actually tried to get this to happen in 1999's Rugby World Cup and had to delay it by 8 years to just really fine tune it. So usually it's just two rugby teams trying to beat each other. Whereas this was a scheduled piece of drama that had been rehearsed, that people were, it was set up as a piece of entertainment. This is not genuine rugby. This is actors playing against each other. From what looks like a dramatic game of rugby, because let's be honest, explains the Fiji comeback in the second half.
That is such a contrived piece of drama right there. You know, it's just trying to build drama where there is none. We're like, the writers obviously wrote themselves into a corner. They're 23 down. The crowd's not going to like this. We're not going to get an Oscar. So what about two bullshit tries that no one sees coming, totally against the run of play?
John Smith scored a try that wasn't in the script. So they had to write in another Fijian try to make it more dramatic.
Yeah, exactly.
So Tom Fordyce, the BBC Sport reporter, described this as the finale of the greatest sporting weekend I've ever been involved with. The quarterfinals here, which having watched them back, you're like, oh, his standards were not that high. But it's nonetheless, I think this is a kind of great way of bringing down what's been a broadly pretty good quarterfinals with one outstanding moment in the middle.
Sure. I think two of the quarterfinals are really good, but yeah.
Is this the hipster's greatest weekend of rugby ever? You know, we now have the 2023 quarterfinal weekend, and then you got someone with a beanie and thick rims, glasses. You guys need to put on beanies and be like, you know, 2007's quarterfinal weekend was way better. I liked it before. Before it was cool. Because, you can hear the commentators seem still drunk from the previous night's rivalries with England knocking out Australia. So, this is the true rugby nouses, best quarterfinal weekend.
Speaking of reporters being drunk, man, it's worth reading back some of that BBC blog on the 2007 World Cup, because all of it is about their nights out, which by 2023, they learned to kind of keep to a side and they briefly mentioned it in podcasts. Back in 07, they were just like, then we went out, we had 16 beers, then covered the France game. And they're so blatant. There's a photo of one of them dressed as the Queen on a night out and then saying this was before they recovered the next game. It's
serious journalism.
Fascinating. And also, you know, all of that was, you know, being covered by expenses in a way it couldn't have been these days. All bizarre read. One of them in particular comes across as a proper dickhead, but that's by the by. As we say, the game today being South Africa's 37-20 win over Fiji, which is both a fair and surprising reflection of the game, I think, that scoreline.
Call it the film. Stop calling it a game.
Sorry, the film. Sorry, I'm just immersed in the world of it. You know, Kubrick ties me in, every frame of painting. So, this is the final quarterfinal. Should we have a glance at the teams?
Yes,
let's do it.
Yes.
So, should we start with South Africa? Because bloody hell, it's a good team.
Not bad, is it?
Jeez, I'm sure you guys must be sick of seeing this team now. It's just a list of legends. Austie Rand. Actually, you know, I looked at it and I thought to myself, they're not that impressive anymore. You know, they've only got one World Cup between them, these guys. Except for Durant and Steyn, you know?
Yeah.
But, brilliant front row. Austie Rand, John Smith, Yanni du Plessis, still a youngin here. Just called in for this World Cup due to injuries. So I saw he only arrived a couple days before this match to France.
He worked a night shift as a doctor.
His brother was in the squad. So with his brother in the squad, Mrs. du Plessis could finally say, I have a doctor and a lawyer in my two sons are a doctor and a lawyer. And then any friend at the tea party could be like, oh, where do they practice? No, they play rugby for the Springboks. They don't have time to practice right now. You know, the most overachieving mother at any parent teacher night. Then the legendary Buerta and Matfield lock pairing. I mean, how many words have been written about these two guys? Berger, Rousseau, Smith, back row also, one of the best Bok back rows of all time. Juan Smith, I can't stop talking about the guy. He is so good in this World Cup and in this game again. Mm. And then the legend, Dupria, one of my favorite Springboks of all time. One of the best nines I've ever seen play the game. So Butch James was also there, just to provide some, to pass the ball on. And then Francois Steyn, Jacques Ferry, because obviously injured was, John de Villiers.
John de Villiers, yeah.
Yeah, Francois Steyn came in as a young'un. And then Habana, Peterson, Montgomery, also one of our best back rows of all time. Just a perfect team. This team can win you any World Cup, you know.
Yeah. There isn't a weak link in that team. Yeah, you know, there's no one you look at that team and you're... Everyone is either world-class or one of the all-time greats. Or they're at least like a brilliant system player to be slotting in.
Yeah. Like you look at someone like Butch James, who's maybe not on the caliber of like some of the other names on there. And yet he's exactly the 10 this South Africa team needed. Yeah. You know, he was Andre Pollard before Andre Pollard, you know?
Yeah.
And like the crash ball 10 who will bail you out of any situation with a massive boot. Yeah, we'll have him.
Donny Rousseau and Butch James are probably the only two players in that starting 15 who aren't all-time greats.
Yeah.
Right. And both of them
are brilliant in this game.
Because he's brilliant. I mean, 2009 Lions Tour, he's also like one of the main workhorses. But yeah, a lot of people wouldn't pick him as an all-time eight. And he just slots in so perfectly in his back row.
Yeah. Just absolutely brilliant players who perhaps shone less brightly for, you know, the company around them, I guess. And then, a young Francois Steyn.
We'll probably get into it later, but Francois Steyn. If this is the only game of his you've ever watched, you would think this might be the worst Springbok I've ever seen. I don't know how close you guys watch this match, but he is the cause of so many issues in this match. Absolute shit show today in this game. But luckily, he gets better later on.
He's confident, isn't he? As a young lad.
Extremely. Like,
every single time he carries the ball, he either goes, I'll either kick this whilst being tackled, or I'm going to throw this 30-meter offload that's probably going into touch. And
he's the cause of four or five direct turnovers that lead to counterattacks. Like, I think his first four carries, he knocks the ball on in the tackle straight into a Fijian hand. And then at some point, Butch James just refuses to pass the ball to him anymore. He's just like, every time I send it to you, you fuck up. I am going to kick this thing now. And that's the kind of system player Butch James needed to be. To just
absolutely.
But I think that's kind of the vibe you got of Francois Steyn at this time. You know, I think it was the same with like Dan Bigger when he came through. And there's a few other young players who come through at an early age. And a big part of them getting into that team is they are unbelievably confident in their own abilities. And as you say, Will, like Francois Steyn plays like a proper dickhead who thinks he's the greatest player in history. And he's gone like, I've been picked for quarterfinal, actually, at 12. I'm the dog's bollocks. And this is going to be the day I'm announced.
They've actually picked me over John de Villiers this weekend in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, he could play on one leg. They chose me on two, actually, because I've got working legs. And he, is sure, like, this is the day I'm going to be crowned the greatest Springbok in history. And instead, it's the day in which he makes one break and kicks a long-range goal. And broadly... Otherwise, we'll forget about it. And even then, that break could have linked up. Regardless, really strong team. And we kind of look at that name. You see Francois Steyn at 12 and you forget this was he was what, 19, 20 years old at the time?
He was a baby, a wee baby. Yeah.
Because you think of the career he had afterwards, going on and winning another World Cup, playing until 2022 for the Springboks.
Yeah.
You know, until last year for the Cheetahs as well.
Still so small, still so fast, quick off the step. You don't remember this about him, that he's so fast and quick to move around. But just a little overeager and assumes there's always someone on his shoulder for some reason. But the cannon boot is there. Everything we know about him in the future, he defends well. And just, exuberance of youth might be his worst quality at this point in his career. Luckily, around him, Fury is literally my all-time favorite Springbok, Jacques Fury. He has a few good plays in this game as well. And then, Habana, Peterson, Montgomery, just so much fun.
Yeah.
Talk to us about Jacques Fury. What makes him your favorite Springbok of all time? Because that's very high praise.
Well, he started at the Lions, which is the first thing. So did a banner as well. He started there and he played with the Lions even when they were a bit shit before he moved to Western Province. He was like in a time when no one really had an answer for Conrad Smith, Ma Nanu. Jock Free was the guy who stood up to them and was as good as them in their careers. His line running, you know, his picking of a line, you know, going inside and then out on off a short ball from Dupria or a crash ball when Stain or someone wasn't there was brilliant. And then his ability to clean up a mess. He was like the 13 that never got stuck in no man's land. If there was a break coming his way, he would be able to stop it. He would be able to pick up the ball, get it into someone's hands or set up a ruck. So he was a very calm, much like Smith, Conrad Smith, but more in a defensive role. He was very calm. And then, yeah, brilliant, brilliant attacker. Weird running gait because he had a very short torso and very long legs. So looked very weird when he was running. And yeah, just one of the best 13s and one of the longest serving 13s for the Springboks.
Yeah.
I love the man.
Sits third on the Springboks all-time top try scorers list as well, which is insane as well for a record.
So many tries of his end up under the post because it's off the top of the line out. A ball goes from the 9 to the 10 and it's a short ball to him. You know, they skip the 12. The 12 is a dummy or something. And then he just goes straight down the middle under the post. Brilliant, brilliant attacker.
A player who I think is under-talked about aside of South Africa these days. When he was playing, he was talked of as a world-class operator. And I think very much rightly celebrated still to this day in South Africa. But outside, people have kind of remembered Conrad Smith and Brian O'Driscoll from that era. And he's kind of slid by the side a bit. And I think he deserves so much more credit because
he's one of the strongest centres I've ever seen, for sure.
Oh, yeah. In terms of
was very, very strong.
Strength per like inch of his body. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Also, part of my favourite genre of outside centres, which are 13s who say they can play fullback when they really can't.
We would easily take the role, but you'd rather just stick them on the wing. You know, there's an easy you just go to the wing.
And you started at 13. Why would you play him anywhere else? You know?
Yeah. He started as a fullback at the Lions when he was younger, but yeah, he just got a bit too big, too heavy. So 13 was a bit better for him. Yeah.
Also, just to quickly touch on the bench. So you've Gufra Steenkamp, it's a huge bench. Ruben Pienaar beats Francois Steyn out for being the last retiring player in this team. The only person team technically still playing just about for another few weeks.
Yeah.
And yeah, they don't use any of the backs on the bench, which I love. I kind of like that they go, no, we're exclusively pre-bomb squadding. We will only replace knackered forwards. Otherwise, we're happy.
Yeah, no, and it was a good bench. It was nice. I was sad not to see Bismarck on there. Maybe he was injured or something at this point, but it would have been cool to see him and his brother play together for the first time, I think, for the Springboks here. So, yeah very good. I think Vikus van Heerden was one of the bench replacements as well. Also, underrated back rower. Played in Joburg a lot of his career as well. Very good defender and
he's nasty.
Pretty handy with the hands as well. Yeah, good handle. Offloading game.
And yeah, so it's worth just picking up on Yanni Duplessis as well, as you mentioned, because as you mentioned, Will, in passing, like he'd done a night shift on the 30th of September. This game was then played on the 7th of October. So in that 8-day period, right, he performed a cesarean section 7 days before the quarterfinal of the Rugby World Cup. Can any other player in history claim that? And also, where is that baby now? That baby of a teenager now.
Yeah. I was birthed by Duplessis before he went and won a quarterfinal. That'd be pretty cool to say. Maybe, didn't Jamie Roberts do something? He must have done something at some point.
Oh, Jamie Roberts qualifies as a doctor so he could say he was a doctor. he briefly turned up at like, no, he briefly turned up during COVID as someone and was like, I can tell people to wash their hands. And like, thanks, Jamie, you do that. he didn't do a lot of it. I think he'd probably admit that himself.
Can you imagine though, you're the dad or the mom about to give birth cesarean style, and then the doctor walks in, barely fits into his scrubs, you know, because he's like 103 kilograms, just this gigantic human, and you're like, you're about to stick your hands inside of my wife and pull out a baby. Are we sure you're not going to kill her? Because this man is gigantic.
Worst bit is, I think he shoved the Fijian props back in there with him. Them back down.
And how does he square his Hippocratic oath, you know, of thou shalt not harm anyone and you shall protect life? And then he does that to scrummages on the weekend. It is not, I don't think there's a bit of hypocrite going on there.
The other great thing is apparently because he was so sleep deprived, he hadn't finished all the paperwork to get into France and join up the squad that he needed to do by the time he arrived. So he had to sit in the airport doing it afterwards because, you know, they couldn't let him into the country formally because he'd left the paperwork behind because he was so sleep deprived from having done several night shifts in hospital delivering babies.
It's a hell of an opening scene in the movie, isn't it?
It's crazy.
Great cold like open.
Where you go out and what's his name? Danny Oceans goes to find all the people, you know, and then he walks, bursts into the delivery room. I need you. And he just, I'm there, boss, just rips off the scrubs, baby, hands the baby to the dad and runs out the room.
This summer, George Clooney is Jake White. Lock it in. Make it now. So the Fijian team, we should probably touch on.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, again, very strong Fijian team. You said sick of seeing that team. Boy, am I sick of seeing this Fijian team after their previous game. But they'd achieved one of the greatest moments in Fijian rugby history, if not the, up to that point, a week earlier. And now they headed into a game against one of the big dogs, one of the kind of three real favourites for this tournament.
Up there with one of the greatest Fijian teams of all time, isn't it? Certainly within the context of how they performed in that group stage. The backline, I think, really speaks for itself. So they've got Moses Roaluni as captain, Seru Rambini and Kameli Rantuvu in the centres, Villamoni, De La Salle and Sorelli Bombo on the wings. Just speak for themselves. Three cheers for Sorelli Bombo. Very good, very good. The Norman Ngari at fullback as well has been brilliant all tournament. The big story of the week, however, is that Nicky Little was injured as the kind of the one man who was like the steadier of the ship alongside Roaluni at nine. Unfortunately, was injured, couldn't make it. One of the star players for Fiji here could not make it. So instead, they go with Seremaia Bai, usually a centre playing 10. A very heavyweight 10, you know, speaking of the crash ball 10, as it were. Kind of another one of the pioneers of that, I suppose. Much kind of considered a utility back, Seremaia Bai.
Well, the way he played was pretty damn good. I think especially in the second half, he comes to life. Him and Roaluni, they cut South Africa to pieces. Maybe that's the center in him. He was so willing to carry it into the line. He just breaks it so easily. He was one of the best players on the park in my book. Maybe didn't kick entirely enough, but he was brilliant. And then, like you say, De La Salle or De La Salle, as I think they do pronounce it, he was already a legend by this time, scored a ridiculous try. And then, Nicky Little is an unfortunate thing. They interview him a few times in this game, and you can tell he really, really wants to be on the field and not trying to speak English, which he obviously struggles with.
I love this a moment of, I think it's the first time they interview Nicky Little on the sideline. And they ask him, I think it's about Bayern missing a kick. And then another player dropped a pass early on. And he said, he said, if you drop your first pass, then that means you're going to have a storm. You're going to have a great game. And I really don't buy that as a theory.
like it's not correlational causation, is it? Like,
no, like if the opposition has 15 scrums on your first few touches, then you're not more likely to win the game. Yeah. You're knocking on every first ball.
I love the
moment.
They
keep asking him, and what about this and that? And then he's like, well, as long as he doesn't drop the ball, it'll be okay. Says it like four times in a row. Obviously, he just knows this sentence in English.
I love the moment where he like admits that the South African pack are absolutely dominating them as well. Where he goes we need to avoid all set piece because they're pretty heavy guys and they're kind of getting the better of us. We just need to, and I quote, play Fijian styles.
Yeah, Fijian styles. So, so stereotypical, Nicky. You shouldn't be just pigeonholing Fijians into one style.
Speaking of pigeonholing team talks, right? Moses Roaluni, the scrum half and the captain, right? There's an interview of him talking about this World Cup where he was asked about what did he say to the team, you know, before this game. And he said, so the previous week against Wales, he'd said before the game to the team, I hope this won't be a typical Fiji 50 or something minute game before we drop off in the last 20. And he then said, on this game against the Springboks, that team talk worked last time. So I said it again.
This man is drinking the Kool-Aid. You're supposed to try and break out of these stereotypes, Ralu.
I love that he thought, oh, that team talk went really well last week. I'll just say the same thing again. That'll do it.
They'll be double inspired this time.
Yeah. You know, twice as well if I said it twice.
The aim pro. Can't wait. Recycle your material.
Yeah.
Play the hits. Play the hits, Moses. Yeah,
absolutely. If you're the Beatles and you've written Hey Jude, are you just going to play that once? I don't think so.
That's not what the crowds need to see.
I remember Chris Rock saying once that he felt like he'd written jokes as good as Sweet Caroline, but he can only say them once and make money off them once, where Neil Diamond can write one song and live off it for the rest of his life. And he felt there's a double standard there. But Moses has gone, you know what? I've written one team talk that was so good. I'm just going to do that for every team talk I do again.
You know when Melania Trump came out and read Michelle Obama's speech from like 4 years
yeah,
prior?
Yeah, makes sense.
That's pretty much happened. I just want to quickly touch on the Fijian pack while we're here.
Oh, please.
Because there's a couple of really standout players in here. Iferemi Rwanga is brilliant in this game, an all-world cup. He's a proper sprinter. He's one of those few second rows of this era who you look at and go, like, he has genuine winger's pace on him. Scored I think it was equalising try against Wales a couple of years beforehand when we were there, Robbie. Funny enough, it was our second game of rugby that we ever went to, where we sprinted like 90-odd metres.
It put them 10-9 up, or 10-8 up. Okay. Then Nicky Robinson kicked the late drop goal to win it.
There we go. But Rwanga, proper sprinter. Akabuzi Ngera as well in the back row has been phenomenal. All World Cup, proper tackle machine, extremely quick, which is kind of underrated by how massive he is. And Sisa Koyama Mbole at number 8, who is an absolute monster.
What a monster. Jeez, this guy, he's so massive. He's like 3 times the size of any of the Bok Pek, you know. It's why is that guy running?
And he can run.
Yeah, he's so good. Can't pass, though. I saw a couple of...
Why would he?
Yeah, no, that's not his job.
There's a moment towards the end of the first half where Foy Dupree makes an unbelievable tackle on him, which is one of these that... Look, Andrew Ford, if you're listening, clip that up.
Yeah.
Because Donny Rousseau nails him at one point as well in the second half, which really rocked him into touch. Which was kind of one of the moments to skip ahead where South Africa kind of, you look at them and go, oh no, they're going to win this game. This scare will not do much to them when Dani Rousseau's tackling like that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I think to get into the game, first sort of 10 minutes or so, there's a lot of Fijian attack, which... against Wales and against Canada and so on and so forth. And Japan looked really strong. But the South African defence early doors is really good. And the amount of Fijian like long phase kind of like counts, I suppose, that South Africa just resisted deserves so much credit.
Yeah, I was surprised to see how well the Fijians were able to keep the ball for multiple phases at a time. But this is one of those points I made earlier. Well, I think before we started recording, where you look at the shape, you're trying to find something you recognize in modern rugby. And there's just a straight line. They're just a straight line across the field. pass it down the line and then hope for one of the incredible athletes to, you know, do an inside step. And the boxer just standing off, waiting for them to try and do their moves and then just killing them as soon as they get to the gain line. And then they just send guys into the ruck to cause as much trouble as possible, slow the ball down and reset. It's brilliant work. And then, unfortunately, like Nicky Little said, they just kept dropping the ball whenever they would try and make any headway into the game. And then that South African pack would just get the ball back and punt it downfield.
Yeah. Yeah. As you said, like, it's a very different proposition for a defense to, you know, the teams they've played, the kind of Canada's and Japan's of the world who are semi-pro or early stage of professionals from there, and a pretty shoddy Welsh team. The quality, the organization of the South African defense, but also just the physicality of them. You know, they were, Francois Steyn was not a small guy, even at this stage of his career. But the, and the rest of their back line is, you know, Butch James is one of the biggest tens you'll find, especially again at this time. Just so solid and unafraid of being able to close them down. There's no kind of standing off and going, oh God, I'm going to need some help with, you know, taking Rabini here. And
how good's JP Peterson at that, by the way? Really, like making good dominant hits when he's in loads of space. Like,
it was actually in this game that I decided he is the best defensive winger I've ever seen in my life. Because of that tackle in the second half that he like saves the game basically. And yeah, he hits guys so hard and he loves a little bit of that afterwards niggle as well. Loves the little face rub in the grass and that kind of stuff. So no, he's great. The tackle technique, though, it is definitely a 2000 and something vibe, because it's a lot of upright, you know, shoulders just about hitting the, just under the chin kind of stuff is happening in this game. So you can tell that maybe some of these guys were a bit rattled, to say the least, after a few phases of running into shoulders. And it's not really policed. So
there's one high shot on Habana early on where, you know, it'd be a red card nowadays. And Will Greenwood goes, ooh, that's maybe borderline high tackle.
I have it in quotes here. I think it was 5 minutes. South Africa passes it back into the 22 to kick it out. And a banner takes a shot. And he goes down in a chokehold. The guy's choking him to the ground. And then, yeah, Greenwood in his drunken stupor or hungover, who knows, he's like, bordering on high, that one, just this slurry voice. I'm like, are you sure? Well, are you sure it's bordering on?
Maybe he's talking about his night out the night before. He is bordering on high still.
No, they nearly murder a few guys. And then, but also to go with this Fijian attack, their lineout is incredible. I don't know if you guys noticed that. They do not lose a line-out for like the entire first half of this game against Bakkies Botha and Victor Matfield. The number five, what, Rwanga,
yeah.
Because he's so fast and light, he gets into the air like a rocket. And Matfield and them, they don't even have a chance to compete. And the ball goes off the top multiple times and they just set up for another attack. And the box just have to keep defending and defending. It's beautiful stuff.
Yeah, but the first lost lineout is an overthrow to Rousseau.
Yeah.
Like, but from the Springboks. Like the Springboks lose the lineout before Fiji do. And even then, that's 20 odd minutes.
Yeah.
Which, considering it was the Springboks' big strength in this World Cup, was, you know, they had the best lineout in the world by a long way and they could dominate possession through that. And suddenly that being taken away from them meant that Fiji could keep things a bit even. And there are some quite, you know, open early stages. Montgomery misses an early penalty.
Yeah.
And you're kind of thinking this is cagey. Kind of remains quite tight for quite a long time until, you know, there's a penalty given on halfway and
the boy wonder
the boy wonder himself Stein as
Stein,
good friend Bob, Andrew Ford's neighbor Bob is calling him, steps up and bangs it over from distance, and you're thinking, well, he's settled into the game now. He's settled.
But, no, it was brilliant. But is he? But is he settled? Because his very next touch is when he gets it in his own 22 and he goes, you know what I can do? I can bang this ball further than anybody. And so he hits it so insanely low, like in line with his waist. That ball is traveling like 100 yards, going to bounce out on the 22 or maybe on the 5 meter line, whatever. but gets charged down, obviously, because he hit it lower than anyone's ever hit a rugby ball before. And suddenly you see Fiji's first like try scoring chance of the game. And I looked at this and I saw all the fullbacks hit the line. Really good line there from the fullback, Lingiri. Like, that's great, you know, linking up with his man. But unfortunately, like, in linking up, drops the ball. And then on the reverse angle, I realize it's Sunia Kotto, the hooker, instead, hitting that fullback's line.
Yeah.
And you can see why suddenly he panics and goes like, what do I do in this situation? How do I get us to score?
I saw it as well. I was like, oh, this is trouble. And then the ball just goes to the ground. I was like, what happened there? And I saw, it was Kotto just trying to, he was just found himself with the ball in his hands. So it's a bit of a scramble from there. And South Africa, I think they get it inside the dead ball area and Percy Montgomery kicks it out with a flying knee right into his face from the Fijian fullback. This is the first of one of the more interesting shots. And again, you hear Will Greenwood saying, oh, he was committed there. Nothing in it. They're just the flying knee straight into Montgomery's face. The ball goes out and I think it's a penalty to South Africa and they just clear the line. Much easier.
It's the start of Fijian positionless rugby, isn't it? Where the hooker is hitting a fullback's line from the backfield and the fullback has swapped positions and decided, you know what, I'm going to knee their kicker in the face instead. You know,
it's position. The fullback's getting himself sent off.
Positionless rugby, you know?
Yeah,
anyone can be a thug. Anyone can be...
He's going to be positionless in the fact that he would not have a position when he sat on the bench. Having taken this yellow card.
From that penalty, as you mentioned, they kick to the corner. They go wide very early and Percy Montgomery makes a break off it. And they get really easily, without much trouble at all. Like, talk about an easy exit, but also just an easy opportunity to get up to the Fijian 5-meter line, as they do straight away with all the momentum in the world, going with their big carriers. I think Juan Smith gets it. Dummies against like a little bit of an overlap. And first you go, oh, no, don't do that. Then you go, oh, no, he's Juan Smith. He can carry for an extra 5 meters anyway. Yeah. He gets away with it.
He makes two brilliant carries in a row. There's one where he kind of carries three people with him right up to the try line, having been sort of 10, 15 meters out beforehand. And then, as you say, the one where he dives to the line. And it is kind of on. I kind of get where he goes for it. And you can make an argument he should have given the pass. But also, he's Juan Smith.
He's supposed to be able to get over the line. Now, the defense from Fiji is actually pretty good there. And you can tell they've been told Furidu Priya is the guy you got to take out the game. Because I think they play him like three rucks in a row just to try and slow the ball down. And the ref's like, don't do that. Please stop it. And they just like, no, we need to slow the ball down. Grab the nine. And I think that's where the penalty comes for playing the nine.
You can see why they want to do that to Furidu Priya, though.
Yeah.
Because I am absolutely obsessed with his assist for this Jacques Ferry try, the first try of the game.
My goodness.
He picks it up and doesn't do like the whole kind of like Mike Phillips run sideways to try and tie somebody in thing. Just by picking it up, the Fijians all go, shit, it's Furidu Priya. We have to mark him with everyone we've got. And like very slightly cocked the ball and fires it, like missiles it out to the wing.
It is insane, this pass. Yeah, it's so good. I don't know where he gets his timing from. It's like his arms are like rubber or something, and he just whips it out like it's... How does he get so much speed off such a small little back, drawback of the ball? It is insane.
It's the vision, the looking at the spotting, all the options there, identifying which Fijian players are watching which other Fijian players... Jacques Ferry
reading for his line as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who cuts slightly ahead of the guy inside him, allowing a bit of momentum in case his pass comes, and it does come. Because they're kind of too far apart. They don't have the time to communicate that properly. There's maybe a word being called. Ian McGeegan, maybe there'll just be a look between you. but there can't be much in the word communication. This is these two players instinctively knowing how they play together, knowing how to play off each other, which really clicks. And leads to, as you say, like Fury going over in the corner and South Africa kind of start to take control of the game a bit.
The nerves are settled.
Do you want, just on the Jacques Fury try, right? Do you want a stat about this?
Go on.
And really, you might know this, I don't know. But this try was the penultimate in an important series because Jacques Fury is the player who played against the most international teams, who scored against every single one.
Really?
Jeez, okay.
So damn. He scored against every single team he played in international rugby.
That's insane.
And yet no one talks about him. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Respect. Last
not
of those.
Fluke. Guy won a World Cup.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Last international try was against Namibia in the 2011 World Cup. And yeah, that was the last new opponent he played. Yeah. But yeah, scored against every single opponent he ever faced for the Springboks, including Uruguay, Georgia, Samoa. You know, there's a bunch of kind of teams they'll play less often that he kind of played once and scored against, scored a bunch against New Zealand.
But to score in every single one of those games is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, insane, I know it doesn't sound like a massive achievement, like, oh, you scored against Uruguay, you scored against Georgia, whatever. But considering those games are often ones where either your pack is so dominant that they're scoring on first phase anyway, or, you know, your wingers are getting ridiculous runs from the backfield, whatever. Like, to do that and every single one, to have that level of consistency is no mean feat.
And or you might even be replaced after 20 minutes because you're up by 50 points. So, yeah, it could be. I need to go watch. This is like a Chris Ashton is actually very good at support lines kind of thing. Maybe this guy is like a genius like support line runner that I've never even realized. I'll need to go look again.
Played 16 opponents, scored against all of them, including the British and Irish Lions as well, worth noting in a test.
I was there. I saw that.
How were you? Oh,
yeah. Too soon.
I told you I'm old.
I remember it fondly. I remember that game feeling like it took 7 hours. I remember it feeling like a month of my life.
It is one of the best. If maybe it's the best live game I ever went to see. I was at Loftus. Yeah. I was surrounded by Lions fans, the most brilliant people in the world, because South Africans don't know songs. We know Borka, 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 ole, ole, ole. So just hearing the songs, the different like supporting groups, tour groups there, it was absolutely brilliant. And then I think we were behind quite a bit in that game. We're going off track here by 2009. And then the fight back and that try from Fury in the corner. Yeah. I think I didn't talk for like 2 days after that game. I was gone.
Yeah, very similar situation. Didn't talk for 2 days, but just from sheer misery. Tell you what, Alan Lewis does not like scrum pants, does he, the referee?
Oh, no.
My goodness. Also, why don't the box keep it in the scrum? Why do they keep doing this weird pick it up and do a maul right next to the scrum they were already in? It's like, no, I don't like having the ball on the ground. Let's rather pick it up and kind of scrum some more, you know. They do it like 5 times in this game where they would be so dominant in the scrum and then they pick it up and form a maul immediately.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing. I think they only score off it once. The rest of the times they knock it on or they get held up or something.
Yeah, when it's 20-all, there's a kind of critical penalty they win for me. It feels very Razzie Coded, who was a technical assistant for the Springboks at this point. And he talked about how there's a few of the things he brought through in 2019 were things he pitched early in his career Nolan had Jake White been like, not doing that. We're not starting a YouTube channel, Razzie. Come on. But he has
you can't put that shit on YouTube.
Oh, he's worried about the time. Yeah, he hasn't got that. It feels a bit like one of those Razzie ideas of going the number it picking up in a scrum and the back five kind of breaking off and forming a maul immediately behind.
They always had Jacques Ferry positioned right next to the scrum because they did the backs didn't have to be back 5 meters at that point.
The backs
could literally stand right next to the scrum. So Jacques Ferry would literally stand next to the number eight every single time and go, great, I'm your first latch in the maul. I'm glad you said that. It's like incredibly Razzie coded.
Yeah. And here's the thing. It might have only really worked once, but I can see it working nowadays if someone brings it back and has a proper look at it and examines it.
There's a way to make that work.
Yeah.
And we're not the right people to figure that out. Razzie is.
He would definitely run into the flanker probably first coming off the opposition flanker. And then you would need your flanker to come off the scrum ultra fast, maybe a lock as well or something to try and
make it so your 13 feeds the scrum or your 12 feeds the scrum instead of the 9,
then
you can get them to go in as a latch.
And you probably want a team like Ulster or the Ospreys or someone who use their backs a lot in mauls, where the backs are a big part of that.
Yeah.
So you've got that kind of setup so they can sprint in both centres.
This is fun, guys. I can't wait to go to the bar.
You have like a gigantic 9, like a Mike Phillips size 9. He could be your first guy.
Or you just put an extra prop in at 9.
Yeah.
Just hope for the best. Or a flanker. That worked with Mike Phillips, as you say. Just a moment on Alan Lewis, because like, I remember him as a referee, I hadn't quite paid attention to how mad his career was.
Okay.
Do you know what his job was prior to becoming a referee or alongside being a referee?
Oh, I think I've heard this before. What is it?
He was a professional.
Not being able to see a giant TV screen? This is just foreshadowing for later.
He was a professional cricketer.
Oh, yes.
So he was a professional cricketer and alongside refereed rugby during his career.
Wow, that's cool. That is a fun job.
It's so, yeah. Fascinating. Like, was a man of the match in a Benson and Hedges Cup game against Kent once. Both his daughters have gone on to play cricket for Ireland as well, which is cool. Robin and Gabby.
That's very cool, yeah. Yeah, very sporting family. I'm hoping I can do the same, but rugby.
But yeah, for Ireland.
Yeah.
The next Josh van der Fleers.
Did you see the moment where Fory de Pre takes a quick tap and runs into somebody to try and buy a penalty? And Alan Lewis is like, nah, I'm not having any of that from you today, sir. Stop trying to buy a penalty.
I watched that about four times, and he says, you can't do that. He needs to have the opportunity to tackle you. I was like, no, he doesn't. What? Is that a rule?
Not if he's not got back. Yeah. Yeah. If he's offside, he doesn't need the
opportunity.
He does not
have to wait for the defense to set before he's doing it. So it's like, that's
why it's called a quick tap.
Let's try to be fair at Lords, you know?
You need to be the other end of the crease first.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true. He was refereeing in the spirit of cricket, wasn't he?
Yeah. My favourite Alan Lewis moment from this game is he calls John Smith over for a high shot at one point. You know, because he's been high tackled, the touchers stepped in and gone. You know, he took someone high, seven green. So he calls him over and he's like gesturing him over and he's walking backwards and Smith's walking over really slowly. And then Smith goes, sorry, sir, to him from a distance. He goes, oh, that's fine. And just sends him away before he says a word to him.
Good lad, then. Good lad.
Yeah, that's true rugby values.
There's a moment where Backy's Border takes a man in the air in the line out, and that's Fiji's first points to make it 8-3.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is the best way to get points on the board is Backy's Border being all
just
grubby.
Wait for him to do something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Though, if you're waiting for him to do something, moments later, he very much does do something. When after a moment of the Springboks being kind of almost aimless for a moment, there's a moment where they kind of Fiji on top, but the Springboks kind of control of the game is eased up a little, I suppose, after being in total control before that penalty. Backy's Bota then goes, no. And he does a sidestep. And it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. He bursts right through and starts running with the conviction of a man who has done this before.
It is insane to see how quick he is. I do not remember him being that fast. Backy's Bota running in the open field, absolutely panicking, hoping his mate Matfield is nearby. Just help me.
I remember Backy's Bota is one of the best locks I've ever seen play, right? I never remember him getting the ball.
Yeah.
In all the times I've seen him play, I thought he always avoided that little funny egg thing that was involved. I thought he just left that to everyone else and he would just smash it.
I remember most of his possession being opposition scrum halves going, oh, gee, no, have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't like the ball because it didn't scream when he hurt it, you know. So why would he have been going with it? But that break of his, that leads to the Seremiah Bai tackle in the corner. My goodness, this is insane. So he breaks through, they do a couple of rucks, and then they go wide where Donny Rousseau and Skalk Berger are on the wing. And it's beautiful in slow-mo, the front-on camera. You just see two Fijians come across and they tackle Skalk Berger, you know, in those days, you know.
Yeah. Ungera nails him, and then whoever comes in to try and help Ungera out basically goes, do you want me to turn this into a high tackle?
Yes.
Let me just hook underneath his chin with my fingers and rip his head off.
Good job, but I see he's still got a neck.
Yeah. The ball spills forward, Donis Rousseau is there, and then Seremiah Bai comes flying from out of camera shot. Beautiful work by the director in this movie, which we've obviously settled, and just bicep straight into Donny Rousseau's chin. He's knocked out before he even hits the floor, and the ball rolls over the line, and I think ref blows the whistle. Scrum to Fiji for that knock on.
Nowadays, both of those are cards. You're getting too centre of the bunker.
Yeah, yeah. With sightings, even like Fijian fans would be like, fair play, that was a bit rough. It is the most insane pair of tackles I've ever seen in my life. I can't believe this was 2007. Even then, this should have been outlawed. And then I think it's, is it Greenwood again? Or it's the other commentator who's like, oh, I think the refs missed that. And again, I'm wondering, can he see a big screen? Because everyone else in the stadium is looking at it. And no, they just carry on with a scrum.
The BBC write-up of this described it as a fantastic double tackle, which Schalkberger sure will have felt. Like,
jeez.
Yeah, I'll say so.
Donny Rousseau didn't, because he was passed out before he hit the floor.
I would say it was a fantastic single tackle.
One guy out of the three made a good tackle.
Ungerer murdered him, and then someone else comes across and goes like, oh, but I can take his head off. Like, I can't really contribute to the tackle, but I can try and get us penalised for it.
I think you guys have watched the Tonga-South Africa game, and apparently Donny Rousseau went off in that one. And
I don't know if you guys remember.
The commentators mentioned that Donny Rousseau is back despite being injured or going off in the first game for, I don't know, it sounds like a head knock. And now he's playing again. He gets smashed in the head again, definitely passed out, gets up and plays again. 2 years later, he's in the 2009 box group. And I think it's O'Driscoll runs into him and he's also passed out on the field. I'm like, someone, please just go in a time machine and stop this man from playing any more rugby before it's too late. It is incredible the stuff that this man and that Donny Rousseau went through.
Yeah. A really worrying trend throughout this World Cup is the amount of players getting visibly concussed than just getting up and wobbling back into the defensive line.
Yeah.
Or playing again a few days later, even not even, you know, a full week later.
Yeah. I mean, Yanni du Plessis is right there. He's a surgeon. So
yeah.
This man should not be playing any more rugby.
Also, if he's pregnant, I can sort that out as well. Headache for a different reason.
And then it's the, I think there's a scrum. They, it's like the Fiji scrums, and this is like a Formula One pit stops. You know, they just get the ball because the scrums are going backwards as fast as that ball is going into it.
Yeah.
They kick it out, and then there's a line out for South Africa, which they set up a maul and go backwards 4 meters, 5 meters immediately, stop, and then go forwards 20 meters. It is the weirdest thing. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
I've never seen that in my life.
And then, they kind of keep crabbing on. Who's at the back but the captain himself, John Smith? The fun thing is, right, I got up 3 separate match reports for this. All 3 of them describe it as he burrows his way over the line. And so I believe that is officially what happened. That was in Kubrick's script, that he burrowed his way over the line.
Yeah. And then also, if you just roll on the camera a little bit, Donny Rousseau, fresh off the canvas, just try and score. Half the guys have stood up. He notices Real Looney on the floor, and he just casually walks up and drops the shoulder on his head. That's just for what just happened to me. You look like the guy who did it. I can't remember. And just like full on shoulders a guy on the floor after the try's been scored and the whistle's been blown. It's just, what a time to play rugby.
What a time to play rugby. The better, good old days, I'm informed. It was better back then, apparently. We want more concussions.
Hell yeah. Bring them back.
Yeah, so there's the Colin Mbole makes a breakdown touchline. Foy Dupree makes an unbelievable tackle on him. Phenomenal. Probably a try saver.
I thought it was Yanni du Plessis at first. Well, I wrote down Yanni du Plessis in my notes and was like, oh no, that's Foy Dupree. I just assumed that somebody that strong must be a tight prop. Mm. But nope, it was Foy Dupree. It's an incredible technical tackle. What a guy, what a player.
Butch James kind of puts the ball into touch for half time, and we come to the end of a glorious first half. And I think, boy, this has been so much fun. Bob Simmons and still slightly tipsy Will Greenwood. What excellent work they've been doing. We throw to the halftime coverage and we have Martin Johnson, future England coach at this stage, who will be England coach in a year's time.
Very calm, very, very nice, very, very good pundit, I think. And then and absolutely losing his mind, Francois Pienaar next to him.
Completely different kettle of fish. He's furious, and I love it.
Yeah, it's such a like reversal of what we have these days. Francois Pienaar, the guy who won it 20 years ago, still getting TV work, just saying they need to keep it tight, they need to slow it down, keep it in the forwards, no actual real, you know, just grind them down and then run it. Where Martin Johnson, previous winner, still the world champion officially, he's like, you know, go around the corner, set up a more, yeah, much more technical analysis. It is such a weird thing to see the South African in the room being the crazy one.
No, just that, like, funny that the more recently retired player is still more in touch, and that was still the case way back then.
Yeah.
Funny that. Sense. Maybe there's a, you know, lesson in this that TV people could learn. Or they could keep hiring Clive Woodward and Johnny Wilkinson. That's the other option they've got. However, right, I'm halfway through this. I'm thinking I'm really enjoying this punditry. I can't wait to get back to the second half with Bob Simmons and with Walker Greenwood.
I especially love that they're speaking English as well. That's something I really like about those two's punditry.
The nice drawl guys in their post-orgasmic chill. You know, they've had such a good night. They are happy people. Yeah.
And then presumably, like, Andrew Ford runs on Bob Simmons' lawn or something, and he's called away. Because out of nowhere, I mean, I just have WTF, wait, actual WTF, written in my notes. Because the game just starts, I think, mid-sentence. I think Martin Johnson's mid-sentence. And not only does the game start, the game starts with Georgian or maybe Russian commentary.
Russian. Bob Simmons turns Russian.
Full on Russian commentators. Very uninterested in the game, it sounds like, as well.
They don't give a shit. And I spend the next 10 minutes of the, you know, first 10 minutes of the second half not caring about the game, because suddenly the commentary has been replaced by bored Russian men, presumably like playing cards and occasionally looking up at the rugby.
So a couple of things about this, right? So, I choose to believe you're right that Andrew Ford stepped on Bob Simmons' lawn. So Bob Simmons went to check his lawn and Will Greenwood went to check what lawnmower was being used by Andrew Ford. So he could commentate about it in 20 years' time on a Lions tour. And what happened is, these Russian guys just basically had a heist of the commentary box and went, this is ours now.
They got called in by bloody Danny Ocean, by Jake White.
Exactly.
Part of his team pulled
this
together.
Is the weird twist. We've gone full like the mirror or the room or something, you know.
But we stepped back. This is like the original version of the film in a foreign language.
Russian cinema. Very tough to handle.
That's it, though. So, Rianne, you were kind enough to send me a dubbed version of this film with South African commentary from Hugh Bladen, where he said, by the way, it randomly turns Russian at half time, so you might want to watch this one at the second half. And so I did. I watched that from the second half. But interestingly, on that version, there was no ref mic on the South African version. So there was one point where Alan Lewis goes to tell somebody off or has a conversation with his touch judges or whatever. And I have no idea what the fuck he's on about, because like the decision that's eventually given is completely the opposite of what actually went on the previous play. We'll get onto it. And so I went, right, okay, I'm just going to check the original version and see if you can understand it on that. And you can hear Alan Lewis talking, but over the top, you can hear these two really bored Russian men not shutting up about something completely unrelated to the game. And usually, you know, a commentator will go, let's just listen to Alan Lewis here, because it's quite an important conversation. Whereas instead, they're just going like, what do we want to order for tea tonight, do you reckon?
Vodka. I want vodka.
Very bizarre turn of events. But
I'm very
stuck
sad
with Hugh Bladen.
We missed out on Greenwood and those guys because they were a ball. I was enjoying them so much. But switch to Hugh Bladen, and he's quite hyper and very bad at pronouncing names. Commentary, South African legend. He's been, he's still doing it in the country. They're not giving him the big games anymore. But absolute legend of the game.
I love how he didn't bother trying to pronounce Kaya Mboli's surname, so he just called him Sisi the whole game.
Yeah.
Every time he gets the ball, because it's CC.
I respect that so much more. Maybe he just thought it was David CC, the zebra flanker. It's possible.
Maybe so.
But
also, he just called him Monty instead of Montgomery.
Yeah, I respect that so much more. than I respect someone who goes, you know what, I can just pretend that Brazilian football has only got one name rather than going, I'm not going to be able to pronounce Cotto.
No. And also they are much more into the script, because as the game goes on, you just hear the panic and the nerves coming in, and they try to coach the team. They are like fans at home shouting at the television, you know, these guys need to stop doing this and they need to start tightening it up. And then when they tighten it up, no, they need to start running the ball, anything just to stop what's happening in front of them. It's brilliant.
I really enjoy early in the second half, Brian Habana's like fall from grace really early on when he gets the ball after South Africa have like faffed around in their own 22 for ages without taking a tackle. Habana takes the ball and looks up and in true Vit Boy fashion goes, I'm going to have a crack here. There's a bit of a gap in front of me. I'm going to have a crack.
Yeah.
And you know when Habana starts to open up, immediately, no matter who they're playing against, no matter what the situation is, you always think, oh shit, he might score here.
He does and a he little starts... hunch down, pulls up his shoulders. Yeah. This man is about to go off. I'm ready.
And he starts to sprint and he looks up and goes, oh, I might not take you on the outside. Fair enough. Let me just slightly change direction. And then he falls over and you go, oh, no, Brian, this was meant to go so well for you. First, you're not scoring. Secondly, you're not even on your feet. And then he gets pinged for holding on. And it's just like, oh, mate, that run looked so good in your head. But now the opposition have just scored 3 points off the back of that.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I think just after that, Francois Steyn, I wrote here, 44 minutes. I think from the kickoff they receive from Fiji, he somehow gets the ball and decides he wants to run it back from the 22. And I just write, Francois Steyn is shit. That's the fourth turnover he does in this game. Runs it back into Fijian defenders, tries to offload to nobody again. Ball goes to the ground and Fijians just get the ball back.
Yeah. And Fiji start doing some Fijiing around this time. We start to see the breakout and the ridiculous skill of Dumi all through the pool stage. And I think South Africa have maybe got quietly confident enough, or they've eased up a bit, or, you know, maybe they've just grown after the 3 points have just scored. And suddenly, like, there's an unbelievable dummy from, I think, Saramaya Bai.
Yeah.
Throws the dummy, goes
a few of those this game.
Yeah, straight through, and they just keep it going from there. They keep this pressure right up. They get to within 5 meters of the line, and there's a brilliant moment of defense by Jacques Ferry, who just flies out into the eye line and spooks him. And I think Rambini knocks it on.
De La Salle, who is like in a proper like try scoring position, frankly.
Yeah, with three men outside him.
It's Bai and Rao Looney. The two of them just all of a sudden in the second half start combining. And Rao Looney plays Furuta Priya off the park in the second half. He, for me, is the better nine.
He's on fire in the second half, isn't he?
It's like he knows Bai is going to go for it. He follows up. He chases. He gets that inside ball a few times and just looks for the offload. There's always someone with him. It's brilliant to see the pressure they put the box under.
Mm.
Yeah. Be right. That moment from Jacques Ferry is a proper like swing the game back in the favor of South Africa to say like, no, you're not getting into this game. You know, no matter how many fancy offloads you want to throw. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. But then from that, having recovered the ball, having pounced on it, the Springboks run a almost perfect exit in the kind of way that it's been a bit of a problem for Fiji. Is they fail to get out of their own territory particularly well. You know, you mentioned earlier the one where they give away a penalty cheaply, and there's a few just small penalties given away, or them not quite making it to touch, or, you know, not finding as much range perhaps as they'd like. And here, you know, having kicked it clear, the Springboks then win it back from the line out and then hang it down further, where the only player dropping back has been Nevolo, the flanker, who then obviously doesn't fancy the kick back, even though he's isolated in his own half his own backfield, and gets turned over. They win the penalty from that. They kick it downfield. They end up suddenly within the Fijian 22, having been on their own 5 meter line, staring down the barrel of conceding a try right after halftime moments earlier. Like, that's the kind of moments that made the Springbok team the world champions. It's 100%. The fact that they clean up and then they push on and they put further pressure on when they're coming under it. You know, they can turn those. The most difficult position to be in, being 5 meters out, you know, from the overlap against you, into them being in control of the game again.
They also do a thing. They do like a setup, like in, I don't know how well you know cricket, where a bowler would do maybe two overs of bowling, leg side, leg side, leg side, leg side. And then when the batter is just a little bit, okay, I'm used to this ball now, the ball goes the other way. And so for a few times in this match, the box get a line out or some set piece in the between the 10 and 22 of Fiji, and they do a bomb into the Fiji 22. I think Butch James does three of them in a row that South Africa has possession in the Fiji side of the field. And you think, okay, time to run it. And they just do the bomb every time. They don't always chase well. So sometimes Raul Looney breaks out. But then at 50 minutes, they in the exact same position, you think there's going to be a bomb again. And no, they run. I don't know if you know the move, the Brumby. Eddie Jones, obviously sitting up in the box, kind of invented this move where you're, I think he ran it in the 80s already or something. You off the line out, you go out to the nine, he goes to the 10, and it looks like there's a 12 crash ball coming. But on the behind the line out, you hit your winger and he comes on a little inside ball and you just do a little switch to him behind you who runs then between the center and the 10. They do that. Get over the gain line, and then from there, I think it's the Matt Field run down the wing, offload to Peterson. It's just a beautiful little thing, just like setting them up for the bomb the whole game, and we know they're going to stand off because they're expecting another kick, and then let's run one of our moves.
When I was a kid, when I was a teenager, they used to call that move the Campese, when that was our call for it, and they would run it with every winger but me. Because they did not think I had the pace nor dynamism to get through a gap.
With that as well, like they leave Matt Field and Smith out there as the jumping lock and the throwing hooker. So they've just conserved those two guys' energy as the two players who could benefit most with being out there. And Foroy Dupre once again hits John Smith on a beautiful line. Yeah. His little pop ball out to Matt Field on the edge is so delightful.
Such a beautiful little draw that. And just little pass under pressure. It's beautiful stuff. Yeah.
It's the sort of splitting up a pod and putting your lock out to break off to be an edge forward and so on. You'd wank over nowadays, but really back then it was just playing good rugby. Just having good rugby players and just giving it to them, you know? And John Smith knows exactly what to do and how to deliver that. And then Victor Matt Field on the wing has no sense of panic whatsoever, unlike, you know, Backey's making that break earlier. He tries to take his man on the outside, who, bear in mind, is a Fijian winger. That doesn't go well for many. And yet, managed to just kind of fade on the outside, reach out, realize he's going to get to the line, and pops it inside to JP Peterson, who's running a brilliant support line.
How good is that line by Peterson?
Comes from nowhere, seemingly.
Yeah.
He was the guy who did the inside ball on the the set piece. He was that guy. So he knew, okay, I need to work my way back that side because there's going to be action that side of the field. It's brilliant.
And like Montgomery runs kind of your traditional support line there and overruns it completely. And Peterson, as you say, comes out of nowhere from outside the frame, popped the ball up brilliantly by Matt Field, and he runs it in as a try. And it's a lovely try.
It's brilliant.
Just multi-phase. Guys know where to go. I loved it. It's modern rugby. It's not just like using your skills. It's using plans. It's brilliant.
And it makes you realize this BOC team are so much more than a big pack, you know?
Victor Matt Field, man. How good. He gets cruelly kind of broken down to just being the best lineout forward of all time, which he was. But also he was so much more.
In South Africa, people would hate him for not hitting rucks, not being in the engine room, you know, doing the Bucky's job. People would lambaste him for like, why is Matt Field in the midfield doing chip kicks? Or why is Matt Field on the wing offloading to wingers when you can do that if you have those skills? You know, and
if you've got Bucky's doing all the hard work for you as well.
Yeah.
That's why they're a perfect combo. It's so good. They're like a centre combo, aren't they?
Or even a second row pairing.
Yeah.
So after this, there's an interesting moment. So there's one thing that I knew about this game, right? I mean, I guessed that South Africa won it because it was a quarterfinal and they went on and won the World Cup. So I kind of figured that out. But there is a famous old Ruddy Data video just called Three Crazy Minutes of Fijian Rugby.
Because there's a crazy moment straight beforehand, because there's a yellow card immediately following the try.
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course there is. Of course there is.
Mbeni, I think it's a shoulder into Butch James, of all people.
Yeah.
You know? Shoulders the shoulder.
Brave man.
Yeah. I don't know why this one warrants a yellow card. It's nothing like that otherwise.
That's it. There's been dozens of these throughout the game. And then they go, no, but this one's special. Yeah, this one deserves a yellow card. It's like, well,
Bonnie Rousseau probably threw up from a concussion on the other side of the field. Butch James popped right back from this one. No, off the field with you.
Those other ones were bordering on high. This one is high. Rumbini finds himself in the bin. He finds himself sent off. And that is on 51 minutes. Fiji regather the ball and they have a period of doing some quite boring attack that the Russian commentators are not infused by. Of them kind of going nowhere, like pick and goes. Yeah.
Utterly nowhere.
Nothing's going on.
Side to side, flat line, no, you know, modern pods or a guy running behind the line, nothing. Just the flat line, pass it down, and the boxer just standing there. We'll handle this, no problem.
And there begins Ruddy Data's Three Crazy Minutes of Fijian Rugby. And I remember watching that video growing up and thinking, oh, that's cool. And having just got to watch the game, it's like when you watch Psycho for the whole way through for the first time rather than just, you know, the shower scene.
Yeah, the shower scene comes on. Yeah.
When suddenly you go, oh, shit, this is the crazy 3 minutes of Fijian rugby.
That Alfred Hitchcock made himself. Yeah. Rather than Kubrick, he stepped in.
I don't know what they did. They somehow drew most of the South Africans to one side of the field. And then I just wrote, De La Salle bullshit.
De La Salle WTF for me.
The ball gets out to him. There's no one in the backfield for some reason. Or Percy Montgomery's up in the wing, even though De La Salle's covered.
I think South Africa got bored.
Maybe, yeah. That's maybe what happened. He gets the ball. He kicks it over Montgomery. And the man is, I've never seen someone so fast in my life. He outsprints everything, the camera, the crowd, everything, and then scores a very obvious and very brilliant try in the just after that. And then, for some reason, we go to the TMO. Like 20 minutes, they check this thing. This is why I think the ref couldn't see a big screen, because he stands there. The crowd cheers every time the ball is pressed down on the ground. I think this is in the other try, but the players already lined up for the kick. Other players are lined up to receive the kickoff, and yet the ref is still standing there with his hands in front of him, very diligently waiting for the TMO to tell him, yes, it is a try. And I think the TMO is Nigel Owens in this game.
Yeah. Nigel Owens at the TMO, which is great practice for his later career, sitting behind a screen criticizing other referees.
Because he does it for I think he checks the grounding about 15 times and the crowd starts cheering every time the ball gets grounded.
You know what's happening? Finally, he's trying to come up with a one-liner to deliver to the referee.
Just can't think of something.
There's got to be something.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore this try because what you just correctly described that as, Rianne, was a chip kick. It goes like 60 meters. He absolutely wellies that ball. And then you see it bounce along the floor a little bit and you go oh, okay, that's probably going dead. And then De La Salle, inside 2.4 seconds, is then on it and he sprinted 60 meters. And you're like, how can a man physically be that fast? There's a short angle of the ball and you think, that's fine, that's rolling dead. That's not a problem for South Africa. He's overcooked it. What a shame. Wait, what do you mean he scored it? That's physically impossible to travel that fast.
Brilliant stunt choreography from the filmmakers.
Yes. Yeah, De La Salle's body double, great finish by him.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing. The definition of a try that comes out of completely nowhere.
Yeah.
Even briefly wakes the Russians up.
Yeah.
Well, no, it doesn't. They kind of go, oh, De La Salle. And then they go back to chat over the
poker. That's how you
game.
Know they are actually watching the game, because they sometimes say the names of the players. I thought for a second, maybe it's just two guys who just walked into the room and started talking. Then,
so yeah, Mbai gets the conversion of the try and South Africa kick off for there may be a minute and a half into the crazy 3 minutes of Fijian rugby as it all goes mental from here. as the ball gets to Seromaya Mbai once again, who steps and he goes. Links up with Lingiri, who hits an amazing line from fullback. And the Fijians are suddenly on their toes. They're going.
Yeah. Link up.
Raul Looney is there as well. He gets the ball. He runs. He's got, I think, four Springboks behind him. And so, out of nowhere, who's it? It's the 11 of Fiji.
Three cheers for Sorelli Mbombo.
Yeah. Just out of nowhere, he's there. Gets the ball, outsprints the guys, scores a brilliant try, and I'm shitting myself.
That's unbelievable. It comes completely out of nowhere. Bayern knocks over the conversion, right? And in terms of like ball in play time, right? That try is scored on 58 minutes and 26 seconds, right? The Springboks have been the better team for 58 minutes and 8 seconds of that.
Yeah.
There's been about 16 seconds of Fiji being on top, and the scores are level. It's 20 all.
But yeah, for the 16 insane seconds, they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
The best rugby team you've ever seen. Everyone, and with 14 men.
Yeah. They're not
It's not even the full compliment.
Poor old Rambeni having to watch that from the sip in. Just going like, lads, come on. Am I really that much of a letdown?
Points without him, 6. Points with him, 14.
Oh, it's incredible, though, that try by Fiji. That it's just straight away, that is a team with pure confidence. Nothing can go wrong for them. As you say, Raul Looney's little snipe and the perfect timing on the pass. And Bombo's finish is brilliant as well. They, again, check that on the TMO.
The TMO doesn't think so. Because it's another 15 seconds per replay, 50 replays, the crowd cheering everything again. But yeah, they're finally awarded as well.
Like, without the TMOs, it's a crazy 5 seconds for Fijian rugby. With the TMOs, it's a crazy 50 minutes, you know? Yeah. But incredible by the script writers to get that in there, to make this a piece of drama rather than a foregone conclusion, you know?
Yeah. Car comes alive, everything.
This makes it into one of the most Rugby World Cup games ever. Right, because the team that you expect to win comes back and goes on to win it. But there's a moment of the underdog being phenomenal, and that's all you choose to remember. That's all the casual fans, all the neutrals remember.
Honestly,
I didn't even know the final score. I just remember 2020 against Fiji in the 60th minute. Oh my God, I'm dying. What is happening? And I remember we won. I didn't even know the final score. It was too much to handle this game.
Yeah.
After Bombo's try, straight from the kickoff, Rwanga makes a break, and you go, oh my God, it's going to happen again! And Mbai ends up kicking it on the front foot, which I actually stand by as a decision. It's a weird one, though, because I think these days it's a better decision than it maybe would have been in 2007, because defences are a lot more like of an attacking weapon nowadays. So to maybe go, let's kick on the front foot, let's get into their territory and force them to make an error, rather than here. In 2007, it might just be the case that if you're Fiji, bear in mind, all Fijian players are basically an anomaly. You might want to just go through the hands and just go, let's just give it to a freak, see if De La Salle could do something. I don't know.
I think it's a great decision if your team aren't Fiji. I think he makes, my brain goes, oh, that's a great kind of tactical, weighed-up decision. But what it allows Montgomery to do is to just stick it in the corner. Yeah. And Montgomery responds really well and just slows the game down enormously. And the Springboks jog into position. And they do the old, you know, the old Razzie tricks of slowing the game down, not letting them have that pace, making them play on the Springbok speed. There's a story John Schmidt said apparently under the post that we're playing exactly the way that Australia and New Zealand, who've just been knocked out by massive underdogs, were. We can't be a third part of that trio, you know. We need to kick on from here. And we need to play our style of rugby because both of them fell into the trap of playing the opposition style that way.
So what he said is we want this to be a 50-minute Fijian performance once again.
He's then going to give that speech again against Argentina the following week.
I'm sure that those games must have been weighing on them, you know. That when Fiji starts coming back to you, you're thinking to yourself, oh my goodness, is this happening to us as well? And that just, they start falling off tackles, they're running into each other. Stain is still the worst player I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, they are terrible for these few minutes just after half time.
Yeah. But then it kind of starts to, I think, Montgomery slows it down a bit, and then Francois Stein makes a break out of nowhere. And it feels like it starts to change a bit. South Africa get a bit momentum in reply when Fiji probably needed it. You know, Fiji needed to keep going. You felt like if they were going to kick on and win the game, it would be in the next few minutes where the Springboks wrestle the game out of their hands and then De La Salle makes a high tackle, which...
Can we talk about this absolutely insane passage of play? This is the one where I had to listen to Alan Lewis because I had no idea what the fuck was going on. But Fiji go for a very clear, deliberate knock-on and kill an overlap for South Africa when they're about to score, right? And so Alan Lewis calls in his touch judges and goes like, has there been a deliberate knock-on? And one of the touch judges goes, I don't know, I was too busy watching De La Salle making a legal tackle. And the other one goes, I don't know, I was too busy watching Backy's Borta making a legal tackle. And the replays show, like, you know, one of them, like, clotheslines somebody, and the other one, like, knees somebody in the face. And then Alan Lewis goes, like, brilliant, I'll just give a knock-on then instead as a compromise.
It's what he did in the first half when two Springboks got, you know, manhandled in the corner. He's just like... Well, if there's multiple people dying, maybe we should just go for a scrum instead. Because I do not want to send off any more people. It's incredible.
So weird.
And
it's probably fair.
Then from the scrum, though, we get the moment that the scrum mall, using only 1M, uses straight into it, the moment it really works. Where Fiji just like, oh God, we're not doing two scrums in a row. Come on. We're not dealing with this. And they just collapse it and they give away an easy penalty and Montgomery knocks it over to put the Springboks into a lead that they don't relinquish from here.
Yeah.
I completely get it as a call for moments like that, similar to the thing in the 2019 final, the move, as it was known, where they've got it as a kind of desperation move if they desperately need 3 points. Using it once, using it repeatedly feels like a weird risk that the opposition can get used to.
But future oppositions as well.
Yeah, having it as a one-off move is cool.
It is weird. I don't know if it was a way for them to... I don't know if they didn't expect there to be penalties given at scrum time and maybe there would be penalties given at a mall instead or something. It is the weirdest thing to just pick it up and do that. Instead, just keep it in the scrum, which is going way better anyway. So, yeah, it's a weird move.
There's a moment after that where Fiji do rally and Bombo kicks it through. Steyn has to go back and force the ball for a scrum five, despite trying his best to do something insane and run it out when he had, you know, Fijians all over him to force a scrum five. And Fiji launched a bit of an attack from there, but it's not really a Fijian style attack. It's they keep it tight, see if they can drive back the literal 2007 Springbok pack. And Sunir Kotto dives for the line early and he is centimetres away from getting that ball down.
Yeah.
I think it's Donnie Rousseau gets a really good contact on him. Just to halt him.
JP Peterson. It's my favorite tackle of all time. It is JP Peterson in the corner. He wraps him from behind and he rolls over him. And the ball, like you said, it goes down to the ground, 2 centimeters, 1 centimeter, stops, and then just starts going back up again as they roll over. And then Donnie Rousseau comes in off screen just to land a shoulder on the tackled Fijian player. No, it is JP Peterson. He saved our World Cup with that tackle.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing moment. And the way the crowd, which is largely made up of kind of Welsh and French fans that bought tickets, half expecting to be there, had all got behind Fiji and had all really bought into them. You suspect that crowd going against the box and suddenly momentum going and the heads going and knowing the way this weekend's gone and that kind of narrative building, you wonder what could have happened if they had fallen behind again, if the try had been given.
That also comes off.
And you also wonder,
making a break.
If he just about squeaked it down, how long would Nigel Owens have looked over the footage?
Oh my goodness, it would have been days. We'd still be here.
And of course, that was Rwanga on the wing as well, who'd outstripped one guy from a really nice little dummy and then float over the top by Rambeni. You back Rwanga to finish that, but it is insane strength on JP Peterson to hold up like a really fast lock. That is no mean feat whatsoever. And to roll him into touch, as you say, it's a try saver, potentially a World Cup saver.
Mm. Yeah.
Saramayo and Bide go for a random rush drop goal as well, which is quite poor because they've got no setup at all. Like, if we criticise the All Blacks for the exact same thing in the France game, you've got to criticise Fiji for it as well.
Yeah.
But they clearly don't have a very good drop goal setup that they've practiced and rehearsed before that involve all 15 players. They just send it back to Bide, who just goes, I might go for a drop goal here. And it doesn't work at all. It's a horribly struck kick and they deserve to miss it.
I get the thinking, but it feels like a panic. We've run out of other choices here. Option he's made 10 seconds beforehand rather than a called setup.
Yeah.
I think you start to see the fatigue is starting to set in now because they've had to run it at the box so much. It just starts to look like their guys are a little behind. They're not getting to the rucks quick enough. So I think they start trying to do things just to score points because they are getting a bit tired.
Mm. Yeah. A typical for JM 50, 60 minute performance.
Indeed. Should we quickly go into the return of the scrum mall?
Yeah, go for it.
Yet another one.
Yet another one. Well, they form one inside the Fijian 22 and it works pretty well for them once again. Fiji go, oh, let's not collapse this one because that might be a penalty. And the Springboks go, great, cheers. Let more just keep driving you all the way to this try line then, if you don't mind. And it is Juan Smith who dives over on this occasion.
Yeah, maybe the best bok on the park on the day. Finally getting some just rewards. This is just also a game management thing. It's around that just after the Peterson tackle that Butch James kind of comes into the game. You'll notice he starts kicking for the corners. I'm not passing you to you, Frans Steyn, because you keep fucking up. So the ball's not going to 12 anymore. I'm kicking it to the corners, and they really start playing the territory game. They realize they've been sucked into the Fiji running thing, trying to run it out of their 22. And he just says, no, we're going to the corners, and that keeps Fiji pinned in their half, which leads to these scrums and penalties, which helps then Juan score.
Yeah. A well-deserved, well-taken try. The Springboks have kind of just about wrestled themselves into total control of this game by now. Mm. And from here, you don't really have a doubt they're going to lose this. Though, no. You know, there are some, if you look up, you know, some of the comments on the BBC stuff in particular, there's a bunch of stuff from Springbok fans saying, yeah, the game's won already. You know, we shouldn't be letting these teams get through. We need to go back to the Super 8. We need to do all sorts of other things to make sure this doesn't happen again. And then, how those 2 minutes will have stung, I guess. This is why you should always be nervous at World Cup knockouts. Look, Irish fans have proven, always be nervous. Never let yourself not be nervous. That's my phrase that got me through school and through life. I don't know what I'm talking about. So, yeah, Smith scores. He then finds himself moments later, not too long later, in the 22 again.
I have actually it's Butch James. He's playing territory, keeping the ball away from France. 75 minutes. Box have a scrum again in the 22. Very 5 meters. I think Butch James goes for a drop goal, which gets partially charged down. So it's out in the goal, scrum 5 to South Africa. And for once, they keep it in the scrum, amazingly. Mm. And they almost push it over the line, except Skalk Bergen knocks it on instead of picking it up. So maybe this is why they keep going into malls, because he can't control the ball at the back of a scrum.
Isn't it? So the Russians go Schmidt, Jean Schmidt over and over again and can't blame Smith for it.
Nah, it's Skalk
Bergen. No, so it is Skalk
Bergen.
I've got Bergen
down as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought, because the Russians were calling it John Smith, and then the next time they do it, when they form another scrum in a minute, Sharp Berger's now at it. I thought they just like penalised him, demoted him for knocking it on an inch short of the line. Yeah.
Maybe
I thought that was really funny.
The actor who was playing Juan Smith was playing Skalk Bergen in this.
That's
one.
True. It's a double role.
Share a body.
Very versatile guy.
It's the twins from The Shining. Get the Kubrick thing up.
And then I actually have here, between minute 75 and minute 79, there's 7 scrums or scrum resets. It doesn't matter who's doing the put-in, if it's the box or Fiji, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Someone knocks it on, and whoever's in, if it's a knock-on, it's a scrum. If there's a penalty, the box say scrum. So they just run the clock down and absolutely crunch the Fijians into nothingness with 7 scrums in a row, eating up all the time until right at the end. I think they do a push-up, a try at the end. No, Butch James scores.
Butch James,
yeah.
I kind of think, watching this passage, if I was, you know, one of the Springbok players, and I could have been in another life, then I perhaps would have rather, considering what happened earlier in the game with those 2 tries back-to-back, have just spent 10 minutes down here than to have scored like on 71 minutes, then had 10 minutes of defending and Fiji getting the ball further upfield. I'd rather have just spent 9 straight minutes in the Fiji 22 with scrum reset and overpowering them, knowing how good their set piece was. Yeah. You can run that clock down so nicely and so neatly, and there's no real way for Fiji to escape. They've got to keep trying. They can't afford to, you know, continue to try. But the longer they keep defending, the longer they hold you out, the less and less likely it is that they'll come back and score the points they need to get in control. So, yeah, I thought it was a really well-managed, you say, from, you know, John Schmidt, from Foy de Pria, from the Springboks in general.
Yeah,
and then, yeah, as you say, leads to, after the last one, they do play it away eventually, and they find themselves between the posts, and just as the clock crosses 80, Foy de Pria looks up, hears the call from his 10, I think presuming they'll either like kick it out or knock over a drop goal or something to call it, and Butch James goes, no, I don't do either of those things. I'm going to crash the ball up.
Yeah. Just dives over the line, doesn't he?
Yeah, and just run between two guys, score a try, looking angry the whole time.
Furious with the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, he dives over. We get to the 80 minutes. Montgomery knocks over the conversion. 37-20 in the end. Full time. The Springboks move on.
Okay.
Take a note of it. Yeah, as I said, I think one of the most Rugby World Cup games I've ever seen. Fantastic kind of showcase for Fiji after the previous week to show what they can do against a team as genuinely good as South Africa after beating a team who is perhaps not genuinely good in Wales and perhaps not being as strong against Australia, but giving them a decent game. Yeah, real showcase for them, really big moment for them. A game that's still talked about a lot in Fijian circles. And I think from a kind of South African perspective as well, remembered as a scare and a kind of moment in which it all could have fallen apart in an ultimately really glorious year.
And I think ultimately...
Really, really a good Fiji side.
Yeah. I think ultimately that's a scoreline that's deserved because I think Fiji did give them a scare and did deserve to get the points that they did. But at the same time, like the level of resilience that the Springboks had to show to get through that game and not only to do that, but to have a little bit of a shine on top of it. Like, I think that's a fair score, 37-20.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to give credit to Fiji. They took away the line-out. Who expected Fiji to take away a set piece from the Springboks, especially the Matt Field, Bucky's Buerta Springboks? They took away the line-out. It stopped so much of the South African game, and they were so good at going through the phases, which just kept South Africa under so much pressure the whole game. It was brilliant to see. That forward pack of Fiji, maybe not the best scrummages, but all the rest of their game is brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we do Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Should we start with Man of the Match?
Okay.
Has to be, for me, Raul Looney.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I like it.
Especially in the second half, you didn't even know Faree fucking Dupria was on the field because that man was... He was at every breakdown. His passes were accurate. He was making breaks. His support lines were incredible. Everything Bai did, he was there to help him or to support him. And also he had to have the camera stuck in his face in the anthems and he didn't blink. You know, I don't know if you noticed. But these French, I swear his nose touched the glass, the lens of the camera. No. So for me, it's Raul Looney. He was absolutely brilliant.
I've got written down. Right. For both Naevo, the flanker for Fiji, we're not really talked about, but both him and Juan Smith, right? I've got them both written down kind of in the middle of the Man of the Match and Dick of the Day columns because both of them played really well at just fucking shit up. Like, I don't think what either of them really did was rugby, but it was really, really good whatever they were doing. But for Man of the Match, so a couple of them, I think John Smith was brilliant. All game. I think you're right. Raul Looney was just the centerpiece for Fiji and everything they did brilliantly in this game. JP Peterson's one guy I have to give credit to for the tackling just all day long. But my man of the match is actually Donny Rousseau. I think he carried really well. All of his tackles were dominant. Just he did all of the nuts and bolts. It's a shame he kind of lasted sort of 50, 60 minutes. But yeah. When he was on, just everything he did was so impactful. I think so important to getting Springboks that lead early on.
I think it's his work that provides the opportunity for Matt Field to be on the wing because you can trust Donnie to be securing rucks and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, again, there's a few contenders. You mentioned most of them already. Raul Looney, absolutely fantastic. I think Foy de Pria had a brilliant first half and last kind of 10 minutes. And then maybe less so the bit in the middle when Fiji on top. But yeah, first half, I thought he was right up there. He might have been, you know, there for me. And John Smith, again, was brilliant, was phenomenal. And I docked him points previously for dropping the ball 1 yard out. And I've been like, well, I can't give a man of the match if he's done that. And now I'm fully available to. Now I'm fully allowed to. Victor Matford as well, I think, was great. And then, you know, again, a few of the Fijian forwards you mentioned, like, Koso, I think, was great as well.
Yeah.
The hooker. De La Salle for the sheer ability of bullshit that he can produce and the way you saw Springbok swarm to him every time he got the ball beyond that.
Mate, he's so good.
But I think man of the match for me, and I think he's right up there for his play, and I'm reading around the game as well, doubly so, John Smith, who played brilliantly, scored the try, crucial hand in the JP Peterson try, but you then read around the game, right? And Jake White said, to quote Jake White, right, post-game, he said, John told the players he could see in their eyes what he'd seen in those of Africa and New Zealand at the same stage in the previous games after the second try was scored. He said he really kept on the players. He told them to snap out of it. It was one of the most magnificent examples of leadership under the most intense pressure I've ever seen from a captain, said Jake White. And again, you look at other South African players. Brian Habana talked about how they were falling and their performance was slipping. And John Smith just kept on them and every individual player and kind of kept raising their performance back up and said, you know, you look, Victor Matfield said it was one of the best examples of captaincy that he's kind of played under. And it was something he looked to elevate when he was, or to emulate That's rather, special. When he was a captain. And I think for that, to me, lifts that.
I like that. It's a great call. Yeah.
So good. He is. We obviously know Siya Kolisi is like this super inspirational, like just joyous ball of love that like fills a room with pink hearts whenever he walks into it, you know. But for pure like actual by the book inspirational leadership, I think John Smith is unmatched. There was a game against England where South Africa were miles behind at halftime, and he did the halftime talk to prep, and some of the players said that was one of the best leadership performances I've ever seen in my life. So John Smith as a pure captain, I think there's very few that have ever been as good as him.
Yeah. Love that.
Absolutely. Well put.
Player.
And Dick of the Day.
Back in France, Spain. Yes. I know I'm butt in there, but this man, if you ever watched one game of Frans Steyn and it was this one, you would think, what is this guy doing in a Springbok jersey? I think it was 5 turnovers. He threw that ball in. He tried to do a quick line out where he threw the ball
His
own try. He's in goal area with Fijian players all over the place. No, just an absolute shit show.
Alan half Lewis had to stop him because it was such a stupid thing to do.
Yeah. Half the issues that South Africa and pressure that South Africa got under in this game was because of his like youthful exuberance. Recklessness is the right word. No, maybe not a malicious dick of the day. Just a, you know, like bad at your job dick of the day. Frans Steyn, man. Yeah,
I 100% agree. I'm also going to go Frans Steyn because it's like Frans Steyn on coke. Like, it's the complete opposite of who Frans Steyn was by the end of his career. And it was so weird thinking like, oh, wait, you're telling me that this is the same guy as the fat lad who came on in the 2019 World Cup and won them the thing, who with the massive boot was really sensible. You're telling me this is the same guy, this kid with the blonde highlights, like running around on cocaine.
New Zealand 3 times in a row with kicks from 60 metres out. And no, this kid is the one. What is he doing at this World Cup? So bad.
Crazy to watch. Yeah.
So not to fall into, I am the quote man who brings quotes, right? But I want to read you two of the quotes from the press conference that the Springboks held the day beforehand, right? This was Jacques Ferry. He said, I don't think we should show Fiji any respect at all. We've never lost to them, and that's not going to happen tomorrow.
But he was right.
And he was right. He was right. And he gets off on that. Jake White, however, added, when I took over 4 years ago, if you'd told me that my last four games as Springbok coach would be against Fiji, Argentina, who by this point hadn't played Scotland yet, but he just assumed, and then the World Cup final, I think anyone in South Africa would have taken that. It's a pretty winnable run of games.
that man and putting his foot in his mouth. Eh? He's the guy who said Connacht are a bunch of discards from all the other Irish sides before the Bulls went there and lost 37-7 or something. Just so bad at putting his foot in his mouth.
I kind of love that.
My favorite Jake White moment was when he offered to buy the first like 2,000 fans to buy tickets, a beer.
Yeah.
And then didn't hold out, didn't actually buy his rounds. Howard. He also said that he felt that Samoa and Tonga were probably the two toughest pool matches that anyone played in that World Cup.
I was wondering about this. Like, were the box all possibly concussed and punch drunk by the time they got to this game? Because can you think of a more brutal three games to go through? Fiji, they do hit them high and stuff, but they seem to already have tapered it down. I didn't watch the Tonga game. You guys can tell me. Was that as brutal as the Samoa game? Because the amount of shots these Springboks must have taken in this World Cup off the ball and in the chin, and it's insane the stuff they had to go through.
Was that the one where Haletipole was banned, or did he play in that?
That was the Samoa Tonga one.
Yeah, but he was still wrecking ball throughout. Yeah.
Tonga pushed him all the way. It was unbelievable, that game. But yeah, that was
incredibly brutal Tongan team.
Yeah.
Like the kind of model in which I think people imagine Tongan teams now of massive and physical and brutal.
Yeah.
And also I've looked at, we always assume the box are like super frugal. They don't give away tries and stuff, but they weren't really in this World Cup that good at defending. They gave away quite a few points. And it's often against the island nations that the Springboks leak a lot of tries.
Yeah.
We don't know how to defend against bullshit, you know, against stupid talented. Because in the last World Cup, it was Tonga that was the only team that scored like more than a try against us. And in this World Cup, we leaked, 25 points to Tonga. We leaked 20 points here. Okay, it was only 7 against Samoa, but I think against England in the final, we leaked a few points as well. So, yeah, they weren't as good at defending this BOC team, I think, as people might remember.
Mm.
Yeah, you'll be all right against England. There's no bullshit factor.
No.
There's Matthew Tate.
They have Johnny Wilkinson. I mean,
we saw what happened. They did not score many points against us. In two games, I think they scored 12 points. So, not a lot.
So, I think that brings us to an end. I think that brings us through it. Rian, thank you so much for joining us. We've eaten up a lot of your time. We've kept you away from the baby for a long time. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you. Where can people find you? Where can people find your stuff? Where should they head if they want more of this and they want to hear rugby pronounced properly?
Well, I didn't want to make my online name some weird thing, so I just went Rian Lowe. So that's my name. You just Google that or search that on YouTube and you'll find that. And then I do screw around on Twitter way too much. So that's at Ringo26, I think. But I'm sure if you just search Rian Lowe there as well, you should be able to find me. I'm not shy about sharing my name online. Probably stops me from saying anti-woke shit anyway. So your real name in out there in the ether. And those are the two places I'm really active. You won't find me really anywhere else. And sometimes I might do a thing or two on Reddit because, that's a fun little community as well.
Before we go, I just want to say thanks for coming on. As I say, I recently got asked what rugby kind of content on YouTube I'm currently really into, and I did name drop yourself. So anybody who's into this sort of stuff that you've just spent 2 hours listening to, I cannot recommend Rian Lowe's channel enough for just rounding up rugby in a way that just makes you remember why you love the sport in the first place. And if you want a place to start, may I recommend the What Is Rugby video?
It's so good.
That is a masterpiece among many brilliant works that you've done. So, can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your dulcet tones with us.
Pleasure, guys. And also, you guys, keep up the good work. I'm sure other peeps have told you the amount of growth you've given to the game. I no bullshit. Stand around water coolers at work sometimes and people ask me, have you seen the latest Squidge video where he talks about this guy and that guy? Down here in South Africa, casual rugby fans who go to one game a year, maybe, they even know who you guys are. So you've grown the game massively. And
we now know that water cooler exists.
That's
so
ridiculous. Real big fan of that water cooler. Tell it I love its work. Thank you for coming on. Are you still up for the Rugby YouTube Bowling League? that
is there some I haven't been invited. Is there a WhatsApp group?
I think there should be. I can't remember how this started, but I'm sure it came up somewhere. You in?
I think, yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, we'll work out a date sometime.
I'll go buy a Wii.
That's the next thing for it. I'm sure you can beat Andrew Ford. And Mark, 2 cents, who gives a shit? You know, what's he done other than be really good at making content? It's
basically
not
the OG YouTuber.
Yeah. Predates us all.
Number 60 on his channel.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man. It's back in the day. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you to you, the listener, for doing for listening. We will be back next week where the game will be. I always expect whenever I do this, the game to be a really shit, unappealing sounding thing.
I was thinking you're going to go France 81, Georgia 4.
No, it is the semi-final between France and England. We'll see you then. Thank you, everybody, very much. Thank you, Rian. Thank you, Will. Thank you for listening. We'll see you. Good night.
Rugby.
Yes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.